3 years ago, police in three states were on the hunt for two of Australia's most wanted fugitives. Gino Stocco and his 35-year-old son, Mark, were wanted over a string of thefts and crimes committed on rural properties from Queensland to New South Wales and Victoria. They'd been on the run for 8 years. In October 2015, the police finally got their man, or men indeed, but it was soon discovered that Mark and Gino Stocco were not just farm thieves, they were in fact murderers. Nino Bucci was a reporter with The Age in Melbourne at the time of the dramatic manhunt. He's written a new book titled The Stoccos, The 8-Year Manhunt That Captured Australia. He joins us now from Melbourne. Welcome to RN Breakfast.
Thanks, Hamish. How are you going?
Very well, thanks. Gino and Mark Stocco eluded police for 8 years. How did a father and son from a small town in North Queensland end up as Australia's most wanted fugitives? It's quite a tale.
It is. And I mean, you could sort of touch on any number of points to sort of explain how they ended up there. Was it the divorce that Gino had from his sort of wife in the kind of mid to late 90s, which a lot of people sort of saw as something that really kind of tipped him over the edge from a petty crook into a, you know, vindictive man who had gone on to become a murderer? Was it them getting listed as sort of national fugitives in October of 2015 when they were included as part of this AFP list of wanted people, even though, you know, at that time a lot of their offending was not, you know, super serious, I guess? Or was it just a sort of slow burn? And I mean, one of the things I look at the book is that in this 4-year period, sort of from 2007 to 2011, which was right after they'd been released from prison for robbing a yacht club down in Port Ferry on the Great Ocean Road, they sort of were committing more crime, but it wasn't as bad as the stuff they'd end up doing. And then from 2011 to 2015, things really sort of escalated. So, look, there's lots of little, I suppose, points along that road from, you know, two rogues from North Queensland to, you know, two guys that would end up getting done for murder.
I suppose what was interesting to me, there's a line in your book where you write that it'd be easier to paint Gino as an unlucky battler, a bloke trying to make the best of his lot in a town surrounded by other battlers. But that didn't quite hit the nail on the head with him, really, did it?
No, I mean, Gino always had a chip on his shoulder, is what people that have known him for a long time said to me. And I mean, that's not uncommon in places like Ingham in North Queensland, where he grew up. There is that sort of, I guess, shared mentality of a lot of people like Gino, who are, you know, very skilled workers, hard workers, don't have formal trade qualifications, but can do a little bit of everything. It's not uncommon to be a little bit sort of down at the fact that you might not have a well-paying job, or, you know, might not be getting the support you feel you need from governments and that sort of thing. But with Gino, you know, any sort of personal slight that occurred to him, you know, he took, you know, very, very personally and became quite vindictive. And eventually that sort of, you know, led to murder.
Let's talk about the father-son relationship, though, because that's also pretty fascinating and something you look at in significant detail in this book. In talking about Mark, you say within months he'd gone from successful engineering student to a petty criminal. He later claimed he never felt pressured to commit crime. What was it about the father-son relationship, do you think, that drew Mark into this journey?
Yeah, look, I did spend a lot of time looking at this, and I guess it was because, you know, Mark and Gino didn't sort of cooperate with this project. It's hard to completely know, but you know, I looked at lots of things, from whether the sort of the way that father-son relationships work in Italian communities, you know, that very sort of paternal, you know, relationship, whether that kind of had any impact on it at all. I sort of looked at whether, you know, it was simply just a case of once it was those two together on the road, it was, you know, it was inevitable, really, that the most controlling of those two men was going to have more of an impact on the other. I mean, ultimately, what happened and how they kind of ended up on this path was that, you know, once Gino separated from his wife, Mark's mother, he spent a lot more time with Mark. They started building a property together, and you know, from that point, Mark sort of dropped out of uni and just spent time with Gino. Now, you know, there's lots of unanswered questions about that relationship, including, you know, how sort of close they were physically. You know, they shared a bed quite a lot, and that was really sort of, you know, bizarre, uncovering all the different places where they'd done that and trying to sort of unpick what that meant as well about their relationship. There was obviously a lot of instances where it was clear that Gino was the one that was in charge, and yet when it came to the murder, it was actually Mark who, you know, sort of said, just shoot him. You know, it wasn't, and handed his dad the gun. It wasn't Gino who, I suppose, was at that point the dominant figure.
With regards to that murder, they've obviously been sentenced to 40 years jail for the murder of Rosario Chimone. Can you remind us who she was? How did the murder come about?
It was a he. He was the basically caretaker of this property in Western New South Wales. Mark and Gino had, as I said, been listed on this national sort of fugitive kind of list that comes out every year from the AFP as basically, you know, some of Australia's most wanted people. It was actually just Gino on the list, not Mark. But regardless, that basically really put the pressure on them, and they sort of felt that they weren't able to do what they had been doing, getting farm work on different properties and all the rest of it, and that they, you know, basically had to go into hiding. So through somebody they'd met at another building site, they then met Rosario. The three of them and a couple of other gentlemen were involved in setting up a property way out in Western New South Wales that was going to be used to grow marijuana. And as we saw countless times, it didn't take long before Gino and, you know, the person who was ostensibly in charge of the property, Rosario, started clashing over fairly menial things. Gino would hassle him about how he drove the tractor, for example. He didn't like, you know, what they were doing with some of the irrigation. And eventually these sort of arguments basically got to the point where Mark and Gino were fearful that Rosario was going to tell the people who were actually sort of in charge of the operation what was going on and going to get them kicked off. And at that point, they didn't have many other options in terms of where to live or where to stay or where to work. And so they killed him, basically, in a sort of hope that would at least delay the knowledge that they were there and that they were causing trouble on that property.
So there was this dramatic manhunt. There was an arrest in Dunedoo in central western New South Wales. I think it's the manhunt that probably most of us will remember from this case. Take us back finally to those sort of dramatic days and how it all unfolded.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. It was the manhunt that really, really made people sort of take notice of who these guys were. And obviously, at the time the manhunt started, nobody knew about the murder, certainly not the police and certainly not the public. It was something that, you know, once they were arrested in Dunedoo, which, you know, they were arrested back at the property where they killed Rosario, that really shocked people. And that manhunt basically started by chance. There was a cop driving through the small town of Henty in New South Wales who had the automatic number plate recognition, you know, software on his car. He detected that, you know, this Toyota Land Cruiser that was driving past him was actually registered to a small hatchback somewhere else. And so he thought, well, that's not right, and gave chase. The stockos, you know, then sort of shot not at him, but at a couple of the other officers that ended up sort of pursuing them. And basically that started this whole 9-day kind of hunt, you know, across three states for them. In Victoria particularly, there was a bit of an air of Keystone Cops about some of the things that went on in terms of how they sort of slipped through, you know, seemingly impenetrable kind of police cordons and that sort of thing. But, I mean, in reality, they were just very, very good at knowing how to get out of a tricky situation, whether it be through a fire access track or whether it be, down some little sort of deserted road that didn't appear on a map there was any way out of, but that they could find a way through. And that's basically how they were able to stay on the run for 9 days, even though you had, you know, the two most well-resourced police departments in the country looking for them.
Nino Bucci, thank you.
No worries. Thanks, Hamish. Cheers.
Nino Bucci, the author of a new book titled The Stockos, The 8-Year Manhunt That Captured Australia. He's now a reporter as well with the ABC's investigative unit.